Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined, as always, by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, February 22nd, and John, we are having a very real identity crisis here on this podcast. We talked about it before, how we're lean in football, right? Like as a unit, we are finding ourselves being dragged towards the football end of the pool. It's making it real hard to make the hard shift that we talked about last week when we said we're not doing that anymore. We're going fully in on basketball season. Yeah. This kid's making it tough. This kid's flunking classes. This kid's flipping off the teacher. This kid is getting grounded. He's getting suspended. And it is just, they're not making it easy on us.
He's acting out. And
big time.
And he's acting out, and I don't want to give him the attention. I don't want to enable this crap. And you know what the other thing is? Like, you and I were both basically DMing Mel Tucker, asking for just lie to us about news. Give us anything positive to talk about as it relates to football so we can just avoid basketball conversation. But you know what? We're going to stand up, take it on the chin, and look it in the eye. And
yeah,
we're going to call it like it is, like we always do.
You have to confront your midness at a certain point, John. I mean, the thing is, we could talk about Mel's incredible fit that he pulled off at one of the games this week wearing the Montclair shirt, which Mel Fitz is an incredible Twitter account, by the way, just detailing how he's, once again, just the coolest guy in the room.
Austin, I got to ask a question. Rare. Maybe never does a man specifically have a glow up after 35. And I feel like Mel, if you look back at like his early days, he wasn't, you know, I mean, I guess a lot of it has to do with money.
But
you're able to.
It does help.
But did you feel like he had like the same swag? Like his swagger's carries, right?
I feel like you know what he did? He did what I've been saying LeBron should have done for years, and he's dropped the top, man. Yeah. He dropped the top. He shaved it. He took all he had. Listen, he had not great hair. As a person with, I think, not great hair, he had not great hair.
Yeah.
And just decided, I'm going chrome dome. I'm losing the mustache.
Yeah, that mustache was part of the problem, but it was in at the time, so okay.
Listen, he fit. He went through an awkward phase, okay? Mel, who among us didn't?
I've never been out of one. I get it.
Yeah, I am still in mine. But yeah, man, it's just the fits. The fact that he's, you know, I don't want to spill any trade secrets here, but I found out that like his, you know, he had that awesome black vest that everybody loved during the season, which had the gruff Sparty on it. That was a custom job. I don't know if you knew.
Okay, so here's another comment about, as we avoid talking basketball.
Yeah.
how about the fact that like this, if there was any silver lining, like to the pandemic, which there are very few, but that, you know, business cash is in at all levels, including athletics now, like you can wear, like they're all dressed like they're playing in Maui and during league games now. You know what I mean?
Does it take away from, as long as they don't all wear the Hawaiian shirts, because that is one thing that I love so much about the Maui tournament in particular.
Yeah.
It's Maui and then the NFL coaches photo that they always do.
So good.
Where they always look just like objectively ridiculous, all of them together.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you've got now, and the addition of some of these coaches recently, like Andy Reid was always the hit. Chip Kelly always looked ridiculous in those few years he was there. You had, I mean, Matt Rhule wearing his big bright blue smock. I mean, you've got some guys. I mean, I can't wait to see what Dan Campbell shows up in this year, probably jean shorts.
Well, you remember like,
but Mel would be showing up in like, with like a big ass, you know, Audemars on his wrist. It's just a baller outfit.
Here's a take. You ready? I think Izzo has pulled all the stunts and all the levers and nothing's working. He's got one in his tank that he doesn't even know that he has.
Oh, man.
Izzo tie watch. Shout out.
You're so right.
Sarah G is listening right now, and she used to do Izzo Tie Watch, and we appreciated that. And there was a correlation between certain ties and dubs, and like, you know what? You want your team to come prepared and be all business. You be a leader, act like it. You do it.
I mean, that's such a good point. He's never had this arrow in his quiver.
No, is that possible?
Wow.
So okay. Where the
it
suit?
Might be. Listen, Tom, it's coming down to it. Might be time. Might be time to get business serious because, as we saw this past week, the straits are dire. If we're just being very real about this season, John, we talked last week about how this is an unserious team. Mm-hmm. It had a chance, two good chances to get serious. Mm-hmm. And boy, oh boy, did they, instead of doing that, just did the complete and total opposite of getting serious. I guess we have to talk about both. But if we start with Penn State, I mean,
the second that was unserious program in the Big Ten.
Yes. One of truly the worst halves of basketball I've ever watched Michigan State play. And I say that completely seriously, like just truly awful basketball, totally like falling asleep at the wheel, totally stalling out on offense, letting John Harar, he of no post moves, despite 1,000 games played.
I love that kid, Bo.
Oh, so do I. I was watching him the entire time being like, why did we not try to get him when he put his name in the portal?
I like him more because he has no post-moves. I think
he just refuses to improve.
We'll see.
Oh, I think that's a bread trail. That's a crumb right there.
Didn't that was a trigger, is it that one? But I like it. I like knowing what I get. I like rolling into a season being like, okay, I remember this kid. Let's see how his bag has increased. John Harar was like, nope, this is who I am.
I absolutely will not.
For 4 years. And you know what? It's so Big Ten, it hurts. And I love it. He's like, which is why we wanted him so bad. Because he's just this like tank who is like, he had 16 boards in this game.
And many on the offensive side. He's one of the broader young men I've ever seen in my life. And he always looks like he's smelling something terrible.
He just took
those are my John Harar observations.
He took a shot of Malort every time you look at it. Yeah. His face is flush. And he looks like he just huffed gasoline. Like he looks unwell. But we love him. Hey, look, we're going to try and get as many jokes out as we can. Because
it's called compensating people.
This is called deflection. But here's the deal. If you want to be a serious team, you can get up 14 on the road. And that's just what serious teams do that. They don't lose by 4 on the road after building a 14-point lead. Like, for some reason, it's worse that they built a 14-point lead to me. That makes it worse for some.
I think before you even talk about the actual, basketball that was played, I'm pretty sure they had a curtain up in the stadium or inside the arena to not show how many empty seats there were there. And if you lose a game to a team that has to pull that, you are so far beyond help. Like you have reached a new point as a program. And but to talk about the actual game, like I think the thing that's so frustrating is it's the same problems. Like what Michigan State has prided itself on for so long, forever, for as long as I can remember watching this team, is it's a team that gets better as the year went on. Even look at last year, that objectively awful basketball team and season got significantly better as the season came down the stretch. And the getting better was the consolidation of literally just give Aaron Henry the ball every single time. But like, at least they did things that moved forward. This team is actively regressing, and it's not just that it's regressing as a team, but it's like the guys you're like, okay, they're going to take steps this year and move and grow and all this stuff. Like, they're getting worse.
So let's talk about last year's team. And I thought we would put that chapter to bed and never speak of it again. Ugh. But I think it's important as a point of reference for everybody. that there was a turning point that this team hit where against Indiana last year, they decided to stop trying to play basketball the way, maybe less finesse, because they weren't good enough. And Cassius ran a finesse team. They had tough guys, don't get me wrong, but he was the king of finesse, right? Like, he could finish anywhere, and it was his team. Right. He was a maestro, and it was just – it was beautiful to watch. And then they couldn't do that, and it was painful to watch them struggle through that. And then they turned a corner and said, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. Let's stop trying to finesse. Let's just be the tougher team. Can we all commit to being the tougher team? It might mean we get double the fouls. It might mean some people get bloodied up, and it might mean it's going to be a rock fight. And it's not going to be beautiful basketball anymore, but it's the only way we're going to win. And it worked. Now, worked with an asterisk in the sense that they went to the tournament. But I don't know if they make the tournament if they don't start saying, let's just be tougher than the other team. Okay. This team is trying to still figure out who they are, getting worse while they do it. And as you said, they have no identity, and it's game. It's game 26. And you've had guys get worse than you. You've had some guys get better. The rotation is still confusing. And I think the certain point you have to ask yourself is like, where is the thing that you can rely on from Michigan State program? Can you rely on rebounding? Can you be the tougher team? And then we saw them go and do the absolute one thing you can't do in the Big Ten is lose to Penn State. And bullied while doing it. Not just losing to them because Taylor Battle hits three-pointers. Okay. You just lost because you forgot assignments. You forgot that Seth Lundy only wants to launch. And you let him launch 12. He had 14 shots on the game, Austin, and played 40 minutes. He has one scout. And it's, you know, the thing that bothers me, and I'm sorry I'm like taking up so much time here, but like, it's not, the scouts aren't that complicated. There's only so much, because there's so much happening. All you need to do is know one, maybe two things about each player. The scout on these guys is simple. Harar has no post moves. You got to box him out. You cannot let him go on the boards. 16 rebounds. Seth Lundy wants to launch. Do not let him run him off the line and make him take it to the basket. 12 three-point attempts.
Yeah.
My five made. It's like, that's the painful part.
Yeah, I think I couldn't agree with you more. And I think the thing that sucks is a lack of identity as a team is such a hard, like, I think that problem runs so deep in any given roster, because if you are, like you said, nearly 30 games into a season, you don't know what you do well, you don't know who your best players are to fit that assignment, and you don't have anybody stepping up to like make it painfully obvious, that means that is systemic failure. That's failure from the coaches for not doing something to identify, identify who needs to be the group on the floor that can win us some freaking games. That's on these players for not stepping up and taking advantage of the minutes that they're given to them. And I think to talk about the players specifically, like, I actually think this problem might like weirdly fall more on the coaches, because like, it's their job to put these guys like in the right position. And it's clear that they're not doing that. And we can talk about that, but to me, this has been and this is such a stupid phrase, but like a player led program forever. Like Izzo says it time and time again, that my best teams are the ones with the floor general. My best teams are the ones where the guys hold each other accountable. And that leadership specifically always comes from upperclassmen. I mean, I know the team last year stunk, but Aaron Henry took that team by the balls and carried them to the postseason.
And he wasn't
carried them. And he wasn't a leader, and he was completely miscast in that role.
But he did.
But he did it, and it's killing me watching this team, and watching Gabe. Like, listen, I love Gabe Brown. I've been a fan of his for a long time, and I've got that's on record several places. But like, he has not improved in 4 years. He is the exact same player. He seems completely and totally unwilling to even attempt dribbling the ball. And this guy's been in the program playing, not just at the school, but like playing a significant role in teams that have gone deep for a while, and nothing has changed. Marcus Bingham, another guy, like you want so badly for, he looks, you don't make many better looking basketball centers, especially college modern centers. You can make many better ones in a lab, and he's just not answering the bell when it needs to be answered. They're not holding other guys accountable. I can't really blame Tyson Walker for not being the voice in the locker room because he freaking transferred in. And I guess this is where I kind of start giving guys a little bit more credit. Like AJ Hogard and Malik Hall are trying to do everything they can to elevate the play of this team. And I think that in and of itself is a huge, huge problem for a school like Michigan State. I love those guys. They are working so hard. They are talented. They belong in the Big Ten, no question. But this is Michigan State. This is a program that puts guys in the pros consistently. This is, if we want to call ourselves a blue blood, that's what we're supposed to be. Guys like AJ Hogard and Malik Hall should be role players on this team. These should not be the guys that are carrying your team. It's just, I'm sorry. They are hard workers. They are talented. I love them. They are the guys that embody the program. From a strict talent perspective, these are not the dudes that should be the one and two dudes. Malik Hall, again, ultimate grinder, has definitely taken steps forward this year. AJ Hogard, I love his downhill style. Neither of them can shoot from distance. Malik's physically limited. AJ's never going to be a great defender. These aren't the guys that should be the headliners that you're looking to in crunch time when you have seniors like Gabe Brown and like Marcus Bingham on the floor playing 30-something minutes a night, or should be playing 30-something minutes a night. Julius Marble, another great example. Guy busts his ass. He goes through streaks of not being good and then being great. He's developed some nice, really nice little mid-range and a nice little baby hook. But like defensively, he's 6'9" on his tall days. Mm-hmm. He's not gonna be able to go out there and guard Kofi Coburn. I'm terrified of what's gonna happen when he guards Zach Edey. Like Hunter Dickinson's probably gonna score on him. Like they are just not where they need to be. And I think it speaks to so many systemic issues. And quite frankly, it speaks to when you don't have that development, it really shows up. Those recruiting whiffs really show up. So sorry for the diatribe, but I think there's a lot to be said for why the team's where it is.
That class had a five. There was one hit, and it was the least, heralded player, Aaron Henry. He turned himself into a two-way NBA G League player. And the rest, frankly, missed. And that's not on the players as much as a misevaluation. It's a misevaluation. You thought something that wasn't, or you didn't develop. So you're either, not recruiting one and done, which is fine, or you are recruiting multi-year guys, maybe 4-year guys, and not developing. It's both. And so it's hard to watch, right? And like you said, there are people getting better. AJ Hogard has gotten better. Malik Hall
100%
gotten better. I think you could argue Julius Marble has gotten a lot better. But to your greater point, they can't be the guys if you want to be a serious, serious team. And that's exactly. No fault of theirs. It's no fault of theirs. It's just
no, absolutely just not.
It's just is. And so that's what's the frustrating part. And, we can point fingers all day long because there's just so many people that are accountable for this, fair or not to be criticized, but this is the program that Tom built. And so he's a victim of his own success here in a way. And, fast forward to an opportunity at home against Illinois. And they come out lifeless. They come out disjointed. they come out without a clue on what to do on offense. And it's just really, it was just really sad to see a team that had a crowd that wanted more than anything in the world in that first half to just help carry them over the hump. And it was just mishap after mishap. And in credit, I guess, a bit to Illinois, but I mean, like,
and then they didn't even play that well.
The thing.
Yeah.
And then the second half was a completely different story, right? They started playing with some fire. You started playing with some urgency. Urgency that needed to be at the beginning of the game.
Because urgency that they should have been shown for weeks. No excuse. I mean, this is so, again, we're in the second half of February. Listen, we're getting late here. On that same token, you still got time. Your time to win the conference is over. That's done. But the time to figure out something that could, you know, make you a fun team to watch in the Big Ten tournament, that could, you know, potentially make you a team people don't want to play in March, that's all still on the table. And that's what they finally started to play like in that second half, which was very nice to see.
And it was. I mean, there are positives here. You know, we'll talk at length about, you know, what could – we saw flashes of things, right? But back to the assignments. Just like in a must-win game on the season, you have two players, not one, two players for getting the scout on Granderson, who had six three-pointers, six, season high, maybe even career high, 24 points. This kid averages, what, an eight a game? This kid's scout is do not help. Do not help. Don't hedge. Don't. And guess what? Joey Hauser did it three times. Malik Hall did it once in the first half. Like, it's not like it was a scramble. And it's, like, so difficult to watch things that you know everyone knows. Everyone in the gym knows. And you're just like – because, like, if you cover the scout, you win this game. Because Kofi Coburn's going to get 25 or 27 or – it's going to happen. You know, Curbelo played like crap. I don't know what's going on with him, by the way. Trent Frazier was a no-show until the final possession. They played well, and except for they just – it's just one stupid thing every game, and it's so avoidable. But, you know, like you said, wasn't all bad. We'll come back to the stat lines for Marcus Bingham and Gabe Brown. But I think you wanted to talk about Tyson Walker's second half, which was honestly pretty brilliant. It was second half.
I don't know, because I think we've seen flashes of this. We saw flashes of this in the second half against Indiana for Tyson. We've seen it in other games early in the season too, a little bit. Like, this guy is in there. That guy, dude stroking threes and making plays down the stretch, getting his own bucket. Like, that's the guy that they recruited. That's the guy that they got out of the portal. And quite frankly, that is the dude that they need. They need that guy. I think my overarching thought coming out of this game was, I'm not surprised they lost. I'm not happy they lost, but the fact that they came out so flat is just so insanely disappointing. And once again, it speaks to the whole identity crisis. Like, this team, they do not have an identity. They don't do anything well. Anything. They don't do anything. I mean, you can tell me, I'm sure there are some stats that prove me wrong there, but nothing they do is like anything you can build on that, like, okay, this is what we do, which is what we were just talking about. If Tyson Walker is going to play like that at least gives you an alpha. Like, if nothing else, that gives you a dude the same way that they did with Aaron Henry last year. Gives you a guy to say, oh, we need a bucket. It's time for Tyson to get the ball. We need somebody to make a big shot. Find Tyson. Someone's got to make a play. Tyson's going to be the one that's going to find Gabe Brown in the corner or Max Christie or whatever. This team, when they find themselves in these terrible offensive slumps, it is because they're all so passive. No one can get – that's why A.J. Hogarth is the only refreshing player to watch on this entire team, because he will get downhill and make a play. Nobody else does that. Second half, Tyson Walker did that. This needs to be for his career, for his career, for the betterment of this team, for the betterment of the future teams that he's going to be on. This needs to be a watershed moment for him. It has to be. because if he's going to play all passive, he's got – listen, Trey Holloman's coming in to play point guard. Jaden Akins is going to be ready for more minutes next year. I mean, A.J. Hogard's not going anywhere. The minutes for Tyson Walker can shrink really fast if he's going to play like he did in the first half. In the second half, well, especially, I should say, when it's next year and he's not the shiny new toy and there's more guys in there to handle the ball. But if he's going to be the scorer, the guy that he was at the lower levels, the guy who went out and dropped like 25 against North Carolina when he was playing at Northeastern, like that guy is what can make Michigan State a dangerous team. And that's what they've missed this entire year. That's why Hogarth got more minutes, because he's been a straw that can stir the drink. They haven't had that anywhere else. If Tyson Walker can do that, he can cover up a lot of warts on this team and actually make them, you know, something that can get to the second kind of weekend.
But dude, that's what, if you remember, we were talking about how does this team become a third weekend team? This was back in December. And we were saying two things have to happen. Tyson Walker needs to play well enough that he takes A.J. Hogarth's minutes, even though A.J. is playing well.
Yeah.
The opposite happened.
Yeah.
He was rest so much that A.J. had not only had to play more, he had to start. Okay. But
it was the clear better option. That's how bad it was. Yeah.
But, you know, silver lining. For the first time in a very long time, we saw the Tyson Walker that was recruited, as you said. Is it there permanently? I don't know. Is it going to ever show up again? I don't know. But we saw it. Can that, if that guy comes back for the rest of the season and makes it so that AJ is going to have to move off ball? Sure. Now we got some. Maybe we have something here. The other one was Max Christie is going to have to play well enough to keep Akins on the bench. Here's where we were wrong about that. Max leads the team in minutes at 32. He's fourth in the Big Ten for freshmen in minutes, and he's 16th in high major team freshmen in minutes. And unfortunately, because he has played so many minutes, you basically split the difference and got you have what you have now. He's not going to get better. Right. It is what it is. He's played too many minutes. You are not going to see that jump. Freshman walls happen. Shoot. If you know, and the risk of it is, if playing Akins more throughout the season, was they're both going to have freshman moments, and ideally they grow enough towards the end of the season that they can pop. I mean, maybe for a game, maybe a couple games, who knows? That can't happen now. It's going to be really hard to have that happen now. His last game, Akins played 4 minutes. Pierre Brooks played 5. If you want to start playing them more minutes now, that puts them in a tough spot.
Yeah, it's really, that's a big ask at this point in the season.
Right. And so, and if you do it, you better do it. You can't, there's no, you know, pulling back on the reins after they give some really freshman minutes and you lose and you're now on a 4-game, 5-game losing streak. You better go all in, because if you go back, now you're back to square one and those games were washes.
His point. Yeah.
So you got to go all in if you're going to play Akins and Brooks to relieve Max, which maybe is the answer. But at this point, this poor kid, you know, I was in our group chat. I said, it's like, obviously there's a great player in there and he's going to go to do great things. But it's like Tom Izzo is shocked that he took the puppy to the dog park for 10 hours a day for 3 straight months. And the puppy's exhausted when he comes home and doesn't want to play with the ball. It's like, well, dude, right. He can't, like, he it's not possible. Like, he's forced. You're asking him to guard the best player. You're asking him to rebound, which is not doing very well. And you're asking him to get 8 shots up a game and not exactly running stuff for him. Like, come on, he's 18. So I'm babying the kid. I'll be the first to admit I like him. So I'm going to deflect any blame of him onto the coaches, because when you're a freshman, I think you deserve that a little bit. But I don't know, man. It's
tough
to watch.
It's difficult to watch. And I think, you know, I've seen – it's kind of funny because you and I were talking about this comparison, and you know, I've seen, I actually saw some other folks make it. So credit to them. You'll know who you are. It's hard. It's hard to overstate to me the importance of the next 8 months in the Michigan State basketball program, the history of the program, potentially. I don't think it's hyperbole to say if things go a certain way, you're talking about a potential like short-term redefinition of who you are as a program. I sort of think we've kind of seen this before happen with MSU. Essentially what I'm saying is there's a dry spell. Like if we're being very open and honest about it, you know, the current state of the program does not give you a lot of optimism, or to be quite honest with you, like a whole lot of reason for optimism. I'm not trying to be like a super doomsday here, but when you look at the remainder of this season, let's say Michigan State, you know, makes the tournament as a sixth seed, maybe wins one more nice game, and then, you know, lose in the second round. An extremely plausible, if not likely, scenario. You're then talking about, and you're going into next year with, I've kind of trashed him on this podcast, but no Gabe Brown, no Marcus Bingham. Those guys are gone. Those are the two plus athletes, probably maybe the two most athletic guys on the entire roster, Aikens aside, but like you're losing a lot there. And then the guys coming back, I don't think you look at the roster and think, oh, this all fits together really nicely. I think a lot of the same issues, you're basically looking at the same team, except you're down your arguably your best shooter and the guy who, when he's checked into the game, is a defensive. We've seen Marcus Bingham be a legitimate defensive difference maker. You now don't have those guys. And I like Trey Holloman. I like Jackson Kohler. I like both of those kids that are coming in. I don't think they're solving the problems that already exist and that I'm not sure next year's roster has the ability physically to overcome. So now you're talking about a program that limped into the tournament last year, probably doesn't do much of note this year. And then next year is not exactly set up to make some deep run. Now, again, a lot can change. Tom Izzo's a great coach. He's a Hall of Famer, all that good stuff. But basically, you're potentially looking at a three-year stretch of extremely mid-play. And you're looking at a coach who is about to be the winningest coach in the Big Ten all time, but is not a spring chicken. You're looking at a coach who has reorganized the deck chairs on the Titanic with his coaching staff each of the last two seasons. And you're looking around a Big Ten and you're seeing programs. There are several programs that are in as healthy or healthier shape. I mean, right now, if you were to look around and look at Ohio State, Wisconsin, Purdue, I mean, Illinois are all in great shape and at or above Michigan State's level right now, pretty convincingly. The parallel there, I think, is a little eerie to the end of the Mark D'Antonio era. And I'm not saying that it's going to end the exact same way or that Izzo's approaching the end or anything like that. But we've seen this movie. We've watched it happen where the program loses momentum. And what's there to gin the pump? How are we going to fire this thing back up? I don't know what the answer is. I think basically we are going to be banking on our old head coach really genuinely embracing the transfer portal because he needs to. The fact, I think, by the way, this gets swept under the rug. The fact that two scholarship spots were left open on this year's Michigan State roster is criminal. I think if it was anybody but Tom Izzo, we would be just calling them out left and right for it because it's malpractice. There are 2,000 guys that enter the freaking portal every single year in football. I know the number's not as big in basketball, but like it might plenty be, to yeah. plenty to choose from. And yeah. They chose to use none of it. And so to my larger point is that, like, I am genuinely nervous about the future of the potential headwinds that this program is facing, and they need to, without development from internally, like, you need Jaden Akins to get better. You need AJ Hoger to be great. You need Tyson Walker to take a step forward. You need Max Christie to be great. And you need to then go find bigs that can play for you next year. And it's just a little nerve wracking that, you know, the future is we knew it was going to be weird after Cassius left. That was inevitable. But now you're whiffing on big time recruits and you don't have those seniors that are, like, now you're looking back at, like, you remember the Javon Vest, Tum-Tum, Marvin Clark, Alvin Ellis stretch. I feel like we're kind of in that again, and that makes me nervous.
Well, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how is the play?
I'm sorry. I can't, it makes me nervous. You know, we gotta be realistic here.
I hear you. And here's the flip. Maybe it is just the February lull. Maybe. And that's why this week is so important,
dude. I hope so.
Because it's hard to keep pointing to that unless things change this week. And what gets tough about that is at Iowa's a bad matchup.
Yeah, very bad.
For a couple of reasons. They are one of, if not the longest team in the Big Ten. They use their life pretty well. And they're the only top 100 team in the Big Ten and force turnovers. They play at a very fast rate, makes people uncomfortable, and they turn the ball over more than they usually do. Here's the thing. MSU turns the ball over whether they're playing fast, slow, or playing horse. Somehow they turn the ball over that way. So I'm not too worried about that. If they want to play fast, shit. Dude, they played fast with Illinois in the second half, and candidly, they outplayed them. So who knows? Maybe that's just what they need, is to stop trying to play, you know, college basketball, unfortunately, you know, set, running sets, doing the right thing, assignment basketball, because Iowa throws all of that out. And it's just like, we're going to play open gym, you know, and it works, and they beat the hell out of bad teams. And when they play adults, they lose. So the difference is, though, is when they play the adult teams, those adult teams are usually running their stuff. You get to track meet with these guys, they're not so bad at it. And that's why you'll see, like, Nebraska get their ass kicked by them, or even, like, Northwestern, and some of these scores are bad. And it's like they lose themselves somewhere in the beginning of the second half, and it just spirals. Look, you want to roll the balls out, try something different, go nuts. I don't care. But something's got to change, and it starts with the head coach, and maybe he needs to wear a suit, like we said. Maybe the seniors need to show up. You know, is that a big ask? I don't know. Seems like
shouldn't be.
And like, you don't have to score to show up, by the way. Like, you can be the most athletic person in the gym and just be in the rebounding conversation on every possession. You can commit to that. You don't have to have your shot on that day, but you can commit to rebounding. You know, you can commit to communicating and talking and hitting the floor. It's simple. It's so simple. And so I hope we see that, you know, and because then after this game at Iowa, you're playing, and we talked about seriousness, and we did the golf analogy last.
Mm-hmm.
They're +3 with five to go. Okay, that's not a good look. So even if they win both of these games this week, which is hard to think about right now. Possible, but difficult to think about. They still are unserious. Still a lot of work to do, right? So, like we said, at this point, you're just playing. You're playing basketball. You're not playing for a conference championship anymore. What are you going to do with that? Have some pride here. And you know, one more thing, Austin. Go ahead, but let's just put it. I don't want to lose sight from the fact that there's some other coaching negligence and insanity that happened in Week 10 this week. I don't want to lose sight of that. But what we can't happen, we will not let it slide that Tom Izzo spent way too much time complaining about the referees after this Illinois loss.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
Oh, absolutely.
We did not like that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree with you. That part of everything that you said, like, I hope that this can be the moment where these guys get that, okay, we're playing for more than just us. Like, is this the moment where Gabe and Mark Spingham are like, holy shit, my career's gonna be potentially, I know Bingham could come back, and I think they actually both could, but like
they both could come back. I was gonna mention that in your
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point. But still, my old point stands, because it's just more about the thematic, like, you're the upperclassman. You guys have been here, done this. You should be carrying the water here. But, like, either way, these guys should be staring their basketball mortality in the mirror, right? Like, this is if either of them have any type of aspirations of anything beyond just continuing their career at Michigan State, like, is this the alarm that goes off in their head and says, whoa, this is coming to an end? And just like, you should be fighting for the program now. Like, and I just wonder if that's going to get through to them. And I hope it does. And honestly, I will go on the record and say this, because I know I just brought a lot of gloom to it. I hope they both come back. I would love it if they both came back. Dude. I know that they could go pro, and they probably will, but like, I would be all for a 6-year or whatever year it is of both of them. Cause maybe then they actually play I'm always willing to take that last swing.
Here's a recommended field trip for any time Izzo team or Michigan State team moving forward. Every year, I would highly recommend that the Michigan State basketball team gets on their bus and goes and watches a Motor City Drive or a Grand Rapids Gold game. And I want them to see how good those players are, one. And two, how little anyone gives a shit. That's your future if you don't figure it out. And that's maybe a future that you might want, and not a lot of people do. So enjoy and take some pride in the fact that you have 15,000 people going nuts for you or want you dead, right? Like, because there's nothing worse than playing in front of, 1,000 people who came for the popcorn. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's not fun. So, and no disrespect to G League players. My point, they're great. That's my whole point. They're very good. So you better enjoy this part of the fact that this is a special thing. You're part of a special program, and you just want to see some fight. Losing with fight is fine. But like,
absolutely.
But losing like with this way, just
apathy.
Just really hard to swallow. So we did mention, Tom did do a little whininess, and we don't like that because it makes us think he might be reaching. You might be out of, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Start blaming other people. That's never a good sign.
No, I mean, aside from putting a tie on, you wonder if he really does have any bullets left in the chamber. And I just wonder, like, for me, it's he finds that way to motivate every one of his teams. Sure. And this one, like, when you got to go to blaming the refs, like, that's not – and it's fine to point out, like, a criticism of the referees. Like, they are not immune from criticism. They shouldn't be. They should be held responsible if they do a bad job, just like anybody should. But
– sure. They weren't the reason.
They're not why you lost that game.
Right.
And like this, you don't need to get, that shouldn't be how you're showing your players like, hey, I got your back. We're going to complain about the refs. Like, that's not what Tom Izzo does. That's not what he's ever done. He's always been the antithesis of that. So yeah, I don't know. But to make a little transition here, certainly not the wildest thing we saw a coach do. Should we talk about that after a commercial?
Oh boy. Commercial. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. All right, we're back. John, it's time. Let's get into it. The thing everybody's talking about. Saw it on CNN today.
You know what? I think sometimes we get so into our, like, Big Ten basketball, sports world. It's a very niche world. Okay. And I don't know, man. Like, when you start to say things like it was covered on CNN, Complex Mag is running a thing. Like, it's popping up in New York Times. Like, you got to take a step back and, like, this was, wow, this was like a bigger deal than our little world. And yeah. Obviously we're talking about the troll at Cole. And it was the game itself got away from Michigan and kind of got just really out everything in the second half of that game. But let's break it down, the fight, the altercation that took place. And let's just go quickly segment by segment, because there are some basketball rules that were broken.
John, you still there?
Oh, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I lost you for a second. Go ahead. Okay.
There are some basketball rules that were broken, and we need to address them one by one, right?
So, absolutely.
So let's walk through it. Game out of hand is over. Greg Gard, just the traditional, hey, we're done here. And puts in the backups. So far, so good. Juwan Howard chooses not to. Totally fine. Juwan Howard chooses to press. Totally fine. Allowed to do that. Greg Gard calls a timeout. Totally fine. Allowed to do that. You want to know why that's totally fine, no matter the circumstance? Because Juwan Howard's still playing.
Yep.
Juwan Howard's still playing. Greg Gard gets to keep playing. If Juwan Howard is put in the backups, now we have a problem. We don't need to be calling timeouts. We need to get the bus warmed up and get this game over with. Okay? So here's where we're at. Juwan's still playing. Greg Gard's still playing. Juwan doesn't like that Greg's still playing. Okay? So there's where Juwan's already wrong. So game ends. Juwan mad at Greg for continuing to play. Lets him know. Greg Gard stops, grabs Juwan Howard by the arm, and says in his post-game press conference it was to explain himself. He thinks that there was a miscommunication. It's neither here nor there. That escalated quickly as Juwan Howard then poked, finger wagging. Still, by the way, we're still good. We're still okay here. This doesn't usually happen, but it happens in handshake lines. A little aggressive handshake and a little talking to. We're still in the clear. And then things get really out of hand very quickly as Greg Gard disengages. Wisconsin assistant coach and players and Michigan coach and players kind of meet, instigated probably the most by an assistant coach from Wisconsin. Krabbenhoff, unsure what.
Not was. Surprising, by the way.
If
remembering
you're an old,
Joe Krabbenhoff.
If you're an old, this should not have jumped out to you. Which brings up an interesting conversation point. Krabby buddy, you're not a player. No matter how badly you still want to be a player, you're not. Which is, by the way, another great reason that every team should have to do a field trip for a G League game, because you don't get to be a player anymore. You are an adult. That change is quick, swift, and it's like drinking heavily on a Tuesday. If you're in college, it's fine. If you do it during the work week, you might be an alcoholic. There's a difference. Okay, so you can't do it anymore. So so what happens is Krabby gets in there, and Juwan Howard also, despite being many years older, seemingly forgetting that he's not a player either, and kind of lets these, I would call it, competitive juices boil over, and completely unacceptable. Obviously, he open hand smushes Krabbenhoff, which leads to a melee, and ultimately ends with Juwan Howard getting 5-game suspension, 2 Michigan players getting a 1-game suspension. I believe a Wisconsin player gets a 1-game suspension. Krabby gets 0. I don't know about that one. Greg Gard gets 10 grand, which paid for by Senator Cole himself. And that's kind of where we're at. You know, Michigan now without their head coach for the remainder of the regular season. We'll get to the repercussions later. But Austin, that was what happened.
Yes. You
know, right, wrong, or indifferent. That was the situation. I'm curious. What's the take?
Well, I mean, to me, and again, we're biased, and this is going to come off as somebody who just is enjoying the fact that Michigan's going through something that doesn't make them look good. But in all reality, like Michigan, the Michigan element aside, because it's not like I'm a huge Wisconsin basketball fan, quite frankly. If that was my head coach, I'd be pretty ashamed of, you know, of him, her, whomever. But just to take it back one step, to talk about the basketball stuff, the I have no problem with what either of them did. I mean, you summed it up so perfectly. Like, you want to keep your guys in there and you want to press. You can't get mad when somebody calls a timeout. Like, what is that? Like, that's sports 101. Like, you're the one dictating the terms here. If you want to, you throw in the white towel like Greg Gard did. He raised the white flag. He was the one who said, all right, we're done here. I'm putting my backups in. And then you kept pressing and you kept your starters in. And that's fine. If that's your prerogative, like you said, no problem with that. Go ahead. But then to get pissy that Greg Garden's got to call a timeout is you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. And then to react in that way to me is just so extreme, like such an extreme example of poor professionalism. Like, Juwan Howard is a dude that played in the NBA. Juwan Howard played at Michigan. He's been around this game for a very long time. And he is a leader of young men. Like, at the end of the day, he's been in these heated situations. He was sort of a tough guy a little bit when he played. Like, this isn't new to him. Like, but to lose your cool against Greg Gard, like, yeah, big threatening Greg Gard because of that is just weak. And like, I understand wanting to stand up for your players. I understand wanting to be tough, all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, you are a employee of your university. You are one of the two biggest faces of your university, which, whether I personally like it or not, is one of the most recognizable universities in the entire country. Michigan basketball, whether they deserve it or not, one of the most recognizable basketball programs in the entire country and in the conference. You are there to represent them, and you just embarrassed every single alumni of your program. And not only that, you just set such an bad example for your kids, because it's not like somebody shoved him. Like, he instigated. He reached out and slapped somebody across three different people for no good reason. Now, if it comes out that something was said that is, you know, crosses a line, then I might feel a little bit differently. But nothing like that has been accused, and nothing like that has been said at all. So that is, you know, I just be embarrassed. And then I think the worst part of it, and I think it's worse, but it's also like the more Michigan part of it, like the more hashtag Michigan man part of it, is that he doubled and tripled down in the press conference.
Oh my God.
Like, not apologetic, not even in the neighborhood of being apologetic. He said it was time for me to stand up for himself. against who? Joe Krabbenhoft? That's what you're nervous about, is Joe Krabbenhoft and Greg Gard are going to come and get you. Like, they just beat you by 15. They want to leave. They were trying to leave. And you think you're going to have to stand up for yourself? Like, get out of here. That to me was the doubling and tripling down and being like, I'm going to be, you know, was just so holier than thou Michigan man BS. And I just like, I just think that part is the worst part. And I will say one other thing. I think if this isn't Michigan, and I think if that's not Juwan Howard, like, it's very possible he gets fired. Very, very possible, if not probable, because this isn't also the first time he's done this. They had a post-game scuffle at Rutgers, if you recall, just earlier this season.
Yeah.
He's not shy about the dust-ups, and he likes to run his mouth, and then he does something like this and gets suspended and costs his team. And he costs his team that is scrapping to try and just get in the tournament. This team's 14-11, and they've been playing better. He deserves some credit for that. But like, to do this and just sabotage your own effort for no reason is just so disappointing. And the last point I will make, and this is where I'll bring it to Michigan State. A lot of people want to say a lot of things about Tom Izzo. I've heard a lot of things from the, you know, call it the blue wall, Michigan media, whatever you want to call it, about how he treats his kids and the things that he does and says and whatever. He has never done that. And he's been coaching for a lot longer than that. And you will, I don't want to hear anything about the way that he has behaved when you have from a Michigan fan, when I see what their head coach has done twice this season, this one's certainly much worse than the first, but I will allow my coach to coach tough and yell at my kids rather than literally assault another coach. Like that is, it's just, I'd be, you asked me, started this tangent by asking how I felt about it. My take, I'd just be embarrassed. I'd frankly just be embarrassed if I was a Michigan fan.
It's bad. It's just sucked, man. Like, and you know what the worst part about it is? Like, it brings out the worst in a lot of people. Not everybody, yeah. A lot of people. And here's where the worst of matters the most. Worst of your own kids. When you are a leader, and the saddest part is he didn't even realize the magnitude of the situation, the gravity of the situation, and or that nobody was able to explain it to him as he walks into a press conference and makes a further jackass of himself.
Right.
Okay. But when you do anything as a leader, you give permission to the people that you are leading to do the same. If a leader chooses not to do the HR training, why should I?
Yep.
If the leader makes it okay, it's okay to get a little drunk at work, maybe everyone starts to do it. If he swings on someone, guess what? Players on the court do the same. That's what happened. You know, it's a slippery slope. As soon as a leader does something, you give permission to everyone else beneath you to do the same thing. And that's what happened. You had other players start to however you want to call it. You know, everyone's saying, oh, it wasn't a punch. Okay, well, you know what? It led to other people punching. And we've seen how out of control things can be. And for what it's worth, you didn't think that was a big deal. You need to kind of educate yourself a little bit about something that happened in 1972 in the Minnesota versus Ohio State basketball game, where some things that maybe didn't seem like a big deal got so out of hand that people ended up in the hospital, quit basketball, got so out of control. So does something that happened in 1972 matter with what happened today? If the situation is the exact same or near about it, where adults did dumb things, yeah, they kind of are. So I think it was really tough to watch adults do a dumb things and then watch other adults defend a dumb thing an adult did. But I guess that's politics.
I mean, it's also, if you find yourself having to, what about, or whatever it is, whatever the saying is, like,
what about,
hey, but what about if you're trying to apply that to this, like, that's probably an issue. Like you shouldn't be trying to justify the fact that your head coach reached out and smacked another head coach. Oh, it wasn't a punch. Okay, so he smacked him. Is that better? Is that different at all? Like I don't think so. So, it is what it is. I would be like, I mean, to bring it actually back to sports, like that sucks for Michigan's team. Like they've got to feel like, hey, thanks for standing up for us, coach. But guess what? We need to win these games down the stretch in order to make the tournament, not win the conference, not, do anything aside from just keep our postseason hopes alive. And he, and he's not the only one who's going to get suspended. In all likelihood, there's stuff coming for some of those players, too, because guys like Musa Diabate was right in there. And that, again, another guy who was very active in the stuff that happened at Rutgers. So, listen, it's. I wouldn't want my program to be defined that way. And I think he should, I would just hope the problem for me is that he's not remorseful, but I think we've spent enough time probably talking about this.
Here's one more quick thing about it. Whenever an organization or an institution suspends someone instead of terminates them, and I'm by no means calling for him to be terminated. I'm just pointing out that when someone chooses to suspend someone, you are openly taking on the responsibility for that person's future actions, especially as it relates to the reason you suspended them. So, in my opinion, Michigan, the university, should be supporting Juwan in the sense of helping him make sure he doesn't put himself in any of these types of situations in the future. What does that look like? I don't know. They need to have a conversation about what that means. Now, is it some type of providing him the tools necessary to not put himself in those situations again? Because guess what? He's going to be baited so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Even more. So, I think the onus is a little bit on the university to when you suspend someone is not just to say, hey, you need to cool, you know, take time off as punishment. It needs to be an educational thing too. So I'm hopeful that, you know, it can be a jumping off point for a lot of people moving forward. You know, this can be an opportunity for Juwan Howard to be a thought leader in the space even. Maybe I'm going too far, but to be like, hey, I made mistakes and this is how, you know, we don't do that in the future. And I'm going to be a leader for not just my program, but a leader for not doing this type of stuff in the future. I don't know. But like, I guess the whole point is like, it can't just be a punishment. It needs to be an educational experience as well.
Yeah, I would agree. Listen, we've gone through some stuff with our guy getting heated, and I'm glad this one's not ours.
Well, and here's the, and to bring it, you know, full circle back to like, I hope that in these, to back to Michigan State and their own struggles right now, I hope that they're learning lessons at the very least and not just taking losses. Because if you're just taking losses, now you're just Nebraska basketball. Oh. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, what's the
difference? I've said a lot of dark stuff on today's show, and I didn't think the words Nebraska basketball would be uttered.
You got to learn from it. So I hope tonight, if you're listening, it's a little spark injected in the team, a little pride. And shoot, man, it's now or never is this week.
Big time. All right, John, I think that's it.
It was fun.
It was therapeutic.
Watching your rivals, you know, that where you can't mess up, you just watch.
Yeah.
It's a unique position. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, it certainly is. Real shame.
It's a shame.
Real shame. That's what I'll say. All right, guys. Thanks, as always, for sticking with us. John, it's been a good one. For John, it's been Austin. We'll catch you guys next week.
See you.